ABC AFL Daily is the best conversation in footy. Hosted by Corbin Middlemass and Ben Cameron, alongside regulars like Mick Malthouse.
I mean, I don't remember too many games, but it's one of the ones I remembered. It was just that physical.
Bob Murphy.
Where do you guys get off thinking you can pick and choose?
And more, it keeps you in the loop with the biggest stories in the AFL and the number one analysis in the game. ABC AFL Daily. 5 apps a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ooh, Mexico maybe with an opening here. And that is the only goal of the World Cup. Scored by Julián Quiñones. And this place is shaking.
That is some good gear. A cathedral of world football, the Azteca in rapture. 80,000 Mexicans delirious as the co-host beat South Africa. There was a lot going on. Two goals, three red cards. Shakira danced. Andrea Bocelli sang. Salma Hayek smiled and waved. The vibes were high in a kind of chaotic way. And you get the sense that chaos is going to be a theme. You only needed to watch Gianni Infantino's pre-event press conference to get that sense. In a moment, we speak to Amanda Shalala in Mexico City. She's a lucky duck. Before checking in with the Socceroos camp in Oakland, did you hear about Mo Touré's injury scare? You will. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Senior ABC journalist Amanda Shalala is in Mexico City. You can hear the hum of celebration behind her. Amanda, best job on earth right now is you. Describe the energy from the opening night of play at the biggest sports show on earth.
Stacky, I thought it was good last night. So the hotel I'm staying at is right in the center of town. It's near a monument called El Ángel de la Independencia. And it's a monument that the people come to and they gather whenever there's a big event. So they were here in their hundreds last night and they were going all night. I could hear them. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's impressive. Tonight, they are here in their thousands, if not their tens of thousands. It is absolutely unreal. So this is on the main boulevard in one part of the central area of Mexico City. They've blocked off about a kilometre of this boulevard, and the fans, they're just continuing to stream in. And there's a stage right at the end, and there's a concert going on, everyone's singing along, there are street sellers selling food, World Cup merch, bootleg mainly. It's just so good. You think about when the Socceroos win and we see those incredible scenes in Fed Square. Well, like, how cool is that? It is cool, but, you know, about 10 minutes after the game's done, everyone's gone home and that's it. We're over it. Here, they know how to party and they do it very well.
Take us inside the Azteca. You know, we're talking Shakira, we're talking Salma Hayek, we're talking Andrea Bocelli. Two goals, three red cards, 80,000 predominantly Mexican football supporters give us the energy and the vibes from the co-host's opening win.
It was just the best feeling walking into that stadium. All around the outside, there was this huge buzz. There were performers, dancers in traditional dress, just getting the crowd all revved up. When the Mexican team bus went by, there was a huge cheer for that. And I was really impressed that everyone was inside the stadium for the opening ceremony, which was 1.5 hours before kickoff. They weren't coming in late. They paid hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for their tickets. So they were going to milk it for everything it was worth. The loudest cheer in the opening ceremony was definitely for Shakira. The World Cup queen. Like, I cannot even believe that I saw Shakira. It was only one song, Die Die, her anthem for this year. But still, what a special moment to be able to experience that. Then the singing of the national anthem, this absolute goosebumps. But of course, the loudest roars came for the two goals. Mexico dominated the game. They deserved to win. It was not a polished performance. It's not going to go down as a World Cup classic from that perspective in terms of the quality of the spectacle, but in terms of the feeling and the atmosphere and the meaning.
That's a great ball, Jimenez!
It was sensational. There were three red cards as well In Qatar 2022, there were 4 red cards for the entire tournament. So pretty unbelievable. We had 3 in one game, 2 to South Africa and 1 to Mexico. It ultimately didn't affect the result because the Mexicans deserved to win, and they did in the end. So all round an A++++ experience. Can highly recommend.
It certainly felt joyous just looking through the television screens. I can only imagine being there. And I feel as though much of this event broadly has been framed around the USA's ownership. Mexico and Canada, they are co-hosts. They only have 13 fixtures each. America has 78. Broadly, what's the sense from Mexicans around this tournament, Amanda?
I've been speaking to a lot of locals over the past few days. Obviously, I couldn't get around to all 133 million Mexicans here. But there's conflicting feelings, and that's, I think, a fair representation of what's going on. And when you have a diverse population, there are some people just so happy to have the World Cup here. They're embracing it. There are others that love their football and would do anything to watch their team, but are angry and upset that they've been priced out of this tournament. The average yearly wage here is around $28,000. So to be having to pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for a ticket is just not feasible at all, simply not possible. So some are frustrated about that. There are others who think the government could be spending their money on better things. There have been a lot of protests from the teachers' union. They've been going on strike to protest about their conditions. There are people trying to raise awareness of the disappearance of their loved ones. There are a lot of other social issues going on here, of course, and people are thinking, why aren't we concentrating on that? Why aren't we focusing on that instead of the World Cup? Then there are others I've spoken to who have said, of course, these are important issues, but let's remember the power of sport to unite and how a positive event like this can really galvanise a community and a country as well. So I would say those are the types of moods rather than, oh, I wish we had more games here.
FIFA boss Gianni Infantino, he was in front of the press leading into the tournament. He was asked about many things. The Somali referee who was denied entry to the United States, a guy who was listed as Africa's best referee by FIFA itself. The Iraqi striker detained for hours at Chicago Airport. Iran only being granted permission for 24-hour game-related windows into the United States. Obviously, the exorbitant ticket prices have been a huge feature of all conversations around this tournament. His response?
Maybe sometimes it's good as well to just, you know, chill, relax.
As a football fan, Amanda, I want to just enjoy the football. You know, I want to keep the politics out of it. But is it just me or is FIFA kind of making it hard?
Oh, Gianni Infantino, he just loves to come out with some strange things. He had that infamous press conference before Qatar where he said,
today I feel Qatari. Today I feel Arab. Today I feel African. Today I feel gay. Today I feel disabled. Today I feel a migrant worker.
This one wasn't as cringeworthy. I was there. It wasn't quite as bad, but I would say it was more full of contradictions and a lot of statements that just made me scratch my head and go, huh, really? So at one point he was saying, we are not kings. We are not all powerful. We can't solve all these problems. And then in another breath, he was saying, look at all the work we're doing. We are the only ones who could make Iran come here. I knew that we could make it happen.
When people were saying, well, it would be impossible for Iran to come to the World Cup, I told them and I promised them that they would come. And if I had to go with a bus to Tehran and drive them here, I would do that.
And then when speaking about ticket prices, he was saying, the demand is there. The people are paying it. They want it. Oh, but we are offering these cheap $60 US tickets as well. Oh, but this is our one chance to make money. But oh, it's okay because people can attend for $60, although not very many.
Our entry price, which is $60, is the lowest entry price of any of the American sports in the playoff phases.
It was a lot of Gianni-isms, if you will. He's trying his best to charm, to be funny. Sometimes he hit the mark. More often than not, he didn't. In the end, is he going to be held to account or criticised? He will be criticised, yes, but the World Cup will go on and people will love and ultimately enjoy it, I think.
Amanda Shalala, you've got work to do. You've got streets to dance on. You've got people to speak to. Thank you so much for talking to us out of Mexico City. Can't wait to get your correspondence throughout this incredible tournament.
Vamos, Mexico! Woo!
Dave Wiener is the founder and chief writer of Football 360. He's in camp with the Socceroos. Dave, straight to it, because I'm stressed. Mo Touré has been a key reason for Australian optimism. Tell me what this injury scare is. How worried should I be? Because I am freaking out just a touch.
Yeah. Hey, Stacky, good to see you. And so is everyone here as well, because we counted the numbers at training yesterday here in Oakland. And I'm talking to you from Socceroos HQ in Oakland now, when we realised Mo Touré was missing. It's the first big injury scare that we've had. And the silence of the Socceroos camp almost added to that, because when you get that silence, you tend to fill that void. What we understand is it was a bit under the weather.
Can confirm that Mo was there, Mo was fit, Mo was healthy. It's all good.
Yeah, look good. Great to have him back amongst the boys. So, he's fine. Running about, full of energy, so it was nice to see that.
It's really, really important. If you name three or four players that Australia cannot afford to have out of their 11, he'd be right on the podium, if not the top dog.
If he is a key cog, another is Geordie Boss. And I'm just intrigued to see how he is handling the level of hype being thrown his way. We've seen him written up in major mastheads as being Australia's Gareth Bale, like pretty high praise. How's he sort of shaping ahead of what feels like a seminal moment in his career?
I think he's very lucky. He's a very laconic character. It is not getting to him at all. He looks so chill to the point that you want to go, do you know you're at a World Cup?
I don't do a lot in my day. I like to stay home and play video games and stuff like that.
And that's actually a huge advantage for him, because nothing is going to scare him. He loves marauding up and down that left flank. He is that good that this World Cup will put him in the shop window for a move to great heights. Like, it is inevitable that he will go to the Premier League or a top league of his choosing. And we need to keep him fit, because he is so pivotal to this structure that Tony Popovich plays and to our hopes. So very, very, very chilled. And I think that's probably the biggest asset he has in his mentality, and he is absolutely fearless.
As we edge towards what is a huge clash with Turkey, what looms as the biggest selection headache for coach Tony Popovich?
Let's assume Touré is fit. There are two grey areas. One more in the sense that Lucas Harrington, I don't think it's a doubt. I think if he plays, he will be absolutely fine, despite the furnace of playing in a World Cup match at 18 years of age. But the fact that Cameron Burgess was so good against Switzerland when he came on, this is a guy that didn't miss a minute in the English Championship last season, so he would have every right to demand and put pressure on that spot. But I think it will go to Harrington. So it's just more that there are two candidates there for that role, and what an amazing thing it would be, a teenager who was playing in the A-League at the start of last season, to be thrown in against Takir in that opening game of the World Cup. The other one is the interesting one. It's probably on the right-hand side of whoever is up front, which we hope is Mohamed Touré. I assume Connor Metcalf will be on the left. And then the question is, and this will tell us a lot when we see the 11 of how Australia is going to start the game. Will it be Matthew Lecky, or will it be Nestori Iraconda? Do you gamble on the youngster to get out there and throw him in from the start? I was at the game against Switzerland. I'm watching him play, and I'm thinking, this guy can take us to another level. But it's a lot to ask him to start, and he does have an impact substitute valuation. Matthew Lecky, Tony Popovich loves him.
I think the luxury of Matthew Lecky is that he can play anywhere. He has the experience and maturity that you don't need a week or two of training in a position with him. You can basically show him a video and he would know what to do.
If he is fit enough, if he's got through the last sort of 10 days of training, my hunch is that Matt Lecky will start, and you've got two players there up front flanking Mohamed Touré that know what Tony Popovich wants inside and out.
Dave, you've been in the game in the vicinity of two decades. You've covered these players their entire career, your entire career. What's your sense in the vibes, how they're feeling ahead of what is a career moment?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of my age there. It's there's two answers to this. One is the older guys who genuinely have gone through my career following them, Matty Ryan, Jackson Irvine. They're in a leadership moment. They're so ready for this. We've spent some time at the team hotel. They're just so excited for their third, fourth campaign, taking on that leadership responsibility, knowing the impact it can have back home with a really successful campaign. Milos Deganek as well, someone that might not play at this tournament, but he's ready. You listen to him speak and you want to run through a brick wall. So these guys are really ready. The younger guys, unless they're putting on a massive facade, they are so chilled. They are so relaxed. They have the most incredible camaraderie. The question is what happens when they walk onto the greatest stage of all. But I think it's a consequence where we are in Oakland here. It's quiet. You don't know or feel that it's the World Cup. They're in really chilled and comfortable training surroundings. So hopefully mentally, you know, they're ready to go into this World Cup thinking that the old cliche that it's any old game, but that could really benefit them approaching the biggest game of their careers.
We know in World Cups gone by, Socceroos teams or managements have been able to roll out like a surprise guest, a little something that can maybe inspire even further. Has there been any indication of, you know, Socceroos celebrity drop-ins? I know, you know, Timmy Cahill was central to the 2022 campaign. Anything like that on the horizon or not just yet?
No, I did see Timmy sent a message this morning. Luke Wilkshire is here with SBS. And there have been a few in terms of celebrities. I saw Matthew Dellavedova, I think, was in camp the other day. But no, not yet. But I'm sure Tony Popovich has got something up his sleeve because he's a master motivator. So it wouldn't surprise if there's something else to come. I will say, though, the answer to that is they might not necessarily need one, because what is unique about this coaching staff is it is dripping with Socceroos heritage. So from Paul Okon to Mile Jedinak to Hayden Fox, Socceroos captains that have led generations. So in a way, there's so much IP for the players to play off when they're in camp that if they need to know about the Socceroos history, it's living and breathing in front of them.
Their first up opponents doesn't get much harder in the group, arguably, than this bunch. Kenan Yildiz and Arda Güler are two that I'm drawn to. How are the Australians going to seek to curb the influence? Like, it's old school, but are we talking man marking? Like, what does it look like? I don't know.
So the reality check for any Australians just sort of coming into the World Cup mode now is, as much as Turkey are not Brazil, Germany, France, and they're in their first World Cup in 24 years, they've got players who play at the highest level. Like Arda Güler is tipped as a future Ballon d'Or winner. He plays for Real Madrid. He is an absolute baller in the middle of the park. And there's an injury doubt over Yildiz, but if he's fit, that could be a massive matchup with someone like Jordan Bosz. This is why I think Lecky will start. The Socceroos game plan under Tony Popovich is about being supremely well organized, hard to break down, compact. And we've seen that in both games. Like as little ball as Australia had in those first two halves, they were very hard to play against. And that's how it will be. It'll be a collective. It'll be that five defense at the back when we don't have the ball. Jackson Irvine, Nate O'Neill, they are workers, you know, before they're creators. And so Turkey, if they're going to break us down, are going to have to work extremely hard and have their magic come out to do that. The biggest caveat to all that is the Socceroos have to do what they didn't do in those last two friendlies. They have to be a little bit more aggressive. They cannot retreat as soon as the first whistle goes, because if they do that and they allow Turkey the time and space on the ball, with that quality, it could be over before the first drink's baked. They know that. They've spoken about it. They've got to be more proactive when the game starts in their defensive structure.
Can't wait for Australia's World Cup opener. Dave Wynn is going to be covering the entire tournament. Appreciate your time, Dave. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. Great to chat.
And just as we wrap up, it's worth noting there was a second game on opening day. South Korea knocked over Czechia 2-1 after trailing at the 60-minute mark. So Mexico, South Korea are 1-2 in Group A, followed by the Czechs and South Africa. Day two, we'll see other co-hosts kick off their campaigns. Canada plays Bosnia and Herzegovina, while the USA hosts Paraguay. Australian fans will have a keen eye on that one. And if you are a Socceroos fan, and of course, you probably are listening to this, a couple of things coming your way. We're talking to a former national captain who is in camp with the Australians ahead of their big opening clash. That is coming your way Saturday. Then Sunday, we'll recap all the action with Mark Schwarzer. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to SBS and the BBC for the extra audio used in this episode.